from Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of streaming media. This is episode 75, recorded August 8th, 2024. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell. And with me this time is Meg James, senior entertainment industry writer for the Los Angeles Times. Meg, welcome to Downstream.
Thank you. It's so nice to be with you today.
I'm glad we could work it out. You've been busy. It's summer. There's vacations. There's covering various trials and places. And then this week, corporate earnings. There's a lot going on in this business. That's why I have a podcast about it, right? I think.
Oh my goodness. It's such a dynamic time to cover the media industry. There is so much going on. And, you know, the stakes are so high.
Yeah, it's true. Speaking of which, we should probably just dive right into it. You just got fresh off, I'll put a link in the show notes to this, fresh off writing a story about Paramount earnings, quarterly earnings season is coming out. And there are, you talk about the stakes. We're going to talk about Paramount and Warner Brothers Discovery, especially. Paramount just wrote down $6 billion. This is I feel like this is a major moment for the entertainment industry where finally in the balance sheet, the fact that traditional television networks have lost all their value is happening, because Paramount today, as we record this, wrote down $6 billion on its TV business, laid off 15% of its workforce. And I guess on the upside, they said Paramount Plus will be profitable next year, and they generated $26 million from direct-to-consumer, but they also lost 3 million subs from Paramount Plus. So that's not great. Obviously, they're prepping for their sale to Skydance. What did you think? What's your overall kind of feeling about what Paramount said and where they're going?
Well, I mean, there were two headlines coming out of the Paramount earnings. One is this $6 billion write down for their cable channels. Yeah. And, you know, your listeners probably recognize that that's Comedy Central, MTV, Nickelodeon, BET, and you know, VH1. Really, you know, they previously were really culturally relevant channels, but with the move to streaming, these channels just haven't been able to maintain audiences. And what happened today was that the company announced that it was going to write down, this is a non-cash impairment charge, but still write down the value of these cable networks by $6 billion. The other thing the company announced was another wave of layoffs. Yeah. We're talking about 2,000 people who will be losing their jobs, which is really scary. And it represents, the cuts represents 15% of their workforce. This is all part of an effort that they say is getting the company ready to be turned over to David Ellison and his Skydance Media, a big media deal that we've been writing about all year, but it probably won't finalize until early next year sometime.
Yeah, I heard them say they said that these layoffs were at least in part redundancies from the planned merger with Skydance. So that's some of it, but it's a huge cut to the workforce, and we've been seeing that, you know, across the industry. A lot of these big studios have been doing that, because Warner Brothers Discovery, which I mentioned yesterday, I think as we record this, they wrote down $9 billion on their TV network business. And you know, this transaction to create Warner Brothers Discovery only happened a couple of years ago. And so there's just a lot of thought that between the Warner Brothers Discovery cable channels and the Discovery, you know, the Warner Brothers Turner kind of cable channels and the Discovery Channel cable channels, they're writing down an enormous amount of this legacy business over at Warner Brothers Discovery. So, I know you did a piece about David Zaslav over at Warner Brothers Discovery. He's obviously one of the most controversial figures in the industry these days. I mean, he's made a lot of money on this, but I'm having a hard time getting a read. He seems to make bold moves, but also it seems to be that things are not looking great at Warner Brothers Discovery. What's your read on Zaslav and what he's doing?
Well, I mean, this is something that you know, we've been tracking for some time. And David Zaslav, who's a very prominent executive, very boisterous and likes to make aggressive moves, you know, really thought that he had solved his problems at the smaller Discovery cable company, which he ran for about 15 years, by merging those channels, which include Food Network, HGTV, Animal Planet, etc., with the much larger Warner Media. This happened a little bit more than 2 years ago. AT&T had bought these assets for $85 billion back in 2018. That's just 6 years ago. And 2 years ago, Warner's or David orchestrated this deal so that his smaller company could swallow this much bigger company. It was a $43 billion transaction. And what that did was left the company just drowning in debt. So for the last 2 years, they've been cutting, trying to, you know, reduce their debt, which they've done a really fine job. Their debt is now at $38 billion, which is still just enormous. Mm. And the problem that the investment community is seeing is that they're letting go of good franchises, and they see that this is just going to be a continuous, you know, or they worry. I don't know if anyone knows for sure, but they worry that it's going to be a continuous slide in value.
Yeah, it's interesting because Zaslav has the support. The impression I get is the support of his board. I've got in a piece from this week, Dylan Byers at Puck News wrote that as long as he's reducing his debt, generating cash flow, and positioning the company for the next deal, even if it's on far less advantageous terms than they'd probably hoped for at the time, John Malone and the other members of the board will probably stick with Zaslav. So you get the sense that this business, I mean, maybe it was always going to be a mess, but it's a mess, and he's definitely made some missteps, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But also, it sounds like the industry perspective is that people on the board, he's their guy. And so, you know, with that dynamic, it's hard to imagine, even as bad as things are, that he isn't going to be given as much latitude as possible to, you know, probably eventually sell some or all of Warner Brothers Discovery's assets. It's a very strange position to be in, but that seems to be where he is.
Well, I mean, you raise a lot of good questions. I mean, when you talk about John Malone, this man has lost billions of dollars just on this stock slide since this merger in 2022. The Warner Discovery has lost 70% of its value. 70, that's like nearly three quarters of its value in the last 2 years. So you have to wonder, you know, why everyone is so patient. But also, you know, I do think that they're, you know, that the executives there have a strategy, and the strategy is just trying to clean up the balance sheet so they don't have huge, you know, debt payments looming, you know, where they're not going to be able to make them. But as you're probably going to talk about, I mean, there have been missteps. And one of the largest, apparently, and at least what Wall Street is most concerned about, is how Warner Discovery let go of the NBA deal that they had for their TNT cable channel since 1989. And now Warner's is suing the league because they say the NBA should have allowed them to match a deal that Amazon submitted. But, you know, whether or not they prevail, you know, it doesn't look likely. It doesn't look likely because of the actions that they took this week, which was writing down the value of their cable channels because of this issue with the NBA, and writing them down by $9 billion, which is just a staggering, staggering figure.
I mean, we're talking about $15 billion in traditional cable TV media being written off this week, just with these two sets of quarterly results. It's very dramatic. You mentioned the NBA. Yeah, I feel like we have to touch on that. It's definitely something that this podcast has been covering for a while now. But Zaslav famously, you know, he sort of said they didn't need the NBA, which didn't go over well with the NBA. And then the NBA carved out a third streaming package. The intent was not for that to go to anybody but a streamer like Amazon, and have the second package, the B package, that was the traditional TNT package. But they did not negotiate and come to an agreement during the exclusive negotiation period. And the moment it was over, NBC and Comcast swept in with a much better offer that was accepted by the NBA. So Warner Brothers Discovery is left doing what, you know, filing a lawsuit this week saying that they were they should have been allowed to match that offer. The NBA rejected the match. There's a lot of very specific details here. They didn't match the package that used to be theirs. They matched a more affordable package that was built for streaming. Part of the challenges that their match included TNT, which is not streaming, and then also streaming it on Max. And I think the NBA would say that not only is that not a match, that's not, this was a streaming package, but I've seen reports that say NBC and ABC ESPN, the linear TV partners for the NBA, don't want another linear TV partner. That was not the deal. And so there's a real reason for the NBA to say, we cannot accept what they're offering us. I also was struck by, I don't know if you thought about this, I have a hard time imagining the positive outcome of, we want to be your partner so much that we're suing you. Like, that's a weird way to have a relationship with somebody else. We're going to sue you to keep us, but that's what they're doing.
Well, yes. I mean, you've made some incredibly strong points. And one is, you know, what is their end game with this lawsuit? Yeah. The fact that they wrote down the value of these networks because they anticipate losing the NBA deal just shows that this is, you know, somewhat of a Hail Mary pass.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, the NBC's deal apparently has some sort of a clause in there where, you know, they don't want a fourth media partner, you know, added to the mix. And you can't imagine that, you know, Disney, which has been a longstanding partner with the NBA, wants that either.
Right.
I think what this does is, you know, sort of reinforce that these leagues, these very powerful sports leagues, see that younger audiences have gravitated to streaming. They're not watching the cable channels. And yes, you know, TNT is still a fine channel and it gets good audience. And the basketball has been a real strength of that channel. They don't see this as being their long-term plan. So, you know, Amazon, you know, has Thursday night football, and, you know, beginning in 2025, they'll have NBA basketball, and the leagues want to be where younger viewers are. Mm. They really do. And that's what's biting Warner Discovery here. It's just that this realization that their cable channels are quickly losing steam.
Yeah, it's all different facets of, I think, the same trend. I should mention, you mentioned Amazon having the NFL. Apparently, one of the arguments about this not being a match is that the deal with Amazon that the NBA has includes promoting the NBA on NFL broadcasts, which Warner Brothers Discovery can't because they don't. Clearly, there are things placed in the deal that they felt were not going to be matched, and one of Warner's arguments will be that they were trying to get out of the deal and that that's against the contract to do that. You know, we'll see. The NBA doesn't even have to respond to the lawsuit until August 23rd. I've seen a lot of reports that suggest that this is going to drag on into NBA season. Obviously, there's one more season on the existing deal into October. However, another interesting angle here is Comcast, because whether this is a real conspiracy theory or whether it's real, I think that there's some truth in it, that if Comcast takes the NBA and puts it on NBC, like they seem to have done, and away from TNT, one of the things that may happen is in a few months, Comcast and Warner Brothers Discovery begin their negotiations for how much the cable channels are going to be paid by the cable company, how much money per subscriber Warner Brothers Discovery gets for the Turner package of channels, and presumably the Turner and the Discovery, the whole bundle there. And one of the values of TNT in the cable bundle has been the NBA, and they get, I think it's $3 a subscriber right now, which is much larger than a lot of the other channels. And keeping in mind, they've also got some difficulty with CNN's ratings not being very good and kind of at all-time lows in the modern era. And so there's some thought that this is actually part of a larger game Comcast is playing, which is not only do they get the NBA on NBC, but by taking it away from Warner Brothers Discovery and TNT, they're going to save some of that money, get it back by not paying it out for TNT, which doesn't have the value that it used to have. really interesting. Again, I'm sure that they thought about it, whether that was the whole purpose, you go to the trouble of bidding on the NBA, thinking you're going to kneecap Warner Brothers Discovery. I'm not sure I buy that entirely, but it could be a real benefit for Brian Roberts at Comcast if this ends up being, you know, Amazon is the partner and Warner Brothers Discovery has to walk away.
I think that that's very astute, because that wasn't the reason to get basketball.
Right.
But what it does, what you know, the guys at Comcast are incredibly smart and they're playing the long game. They see this as a chessboard. And the reason why they really wanted basketball was for their streaming service, Peacock.
Right.
It has other sports, and they and Peacock has really lagged behind a lot of the other rivals. So, you know, they're not even blinking. What they recognize is probably overpaying for the NBA, but they see it as like, hey, this is a market, and you know, we're paying this, you know, ESPN's paying this, and Amazon's paying, you know, $1.8 billion a year. So, you know, that's what the market will bear. But they're really looking at the long game, that they want to be a survivor, and they see sports as a route to being one of the survivors. And when you look at just what has happened to Warner Brothers Discovery stock since May, I think it is, when it first became pretty clear that they were going to lose the NBA, their stock is down like 30% just because of this one contract. And what it shows is, to your point, is that the investors are worried that they're not going to get $3 a subscriber per month for TNT. That you know, they're going to have to reset their rates. And, you know, that's one of the pillars of that company. One of their strongest pillars is just that monthly revenue that they receive from the pay TV companies like Comcast, like Charter, like DirecTV. And if that really starts to crater, then it's going to be very difficult for this company to support its streaming ambitions.
Yeah, we're going to touch on Disney's results later, but I was struck in looking at Disney's numbers again that, you know, we're all talking about, oh, you know, the streamers are verging on profitability now. And then you look up the column and you see the, you know, $800 million, you know, billion dollars, whatever, huge numbers of profit still from the linear stuff, from cable and broadcast. And the fact is, you know, there are two ways to look at it. It's still actually very lucrative, but everybody knows it's going away. And so you're trying to manage so that as it goes down, you're moving your business elsewhere. But you get in these situations like what I think Warner Brothers Discovery is really in now, where there's a real risk of it going away and going away fast. If we look at what Comcast has done with the Diamond Sports regional sports networks, they've taken them on what they call the cliff path, which is basically Diamond really liked being on standard cable and getting money for every single subscriber on a standard cable package. And Comcast has forced those regional sports networks up onto a premier tier, which, you know, those people are paying more money, but a lot of people are not on that tier, which means those are dollars that they never get to see, and it's going to lead to a huge revenue shortfall. And it's got to be terrifying. I mean, everybody knows it's happening. Everybody knows it's inevitable. But still, when you're trying to make your quarterly number and you realize how much money is invested in this, you know, linear TV, it, you know, I'm sure that Warner Brothers Discovery is absolutely terrified of what devaluation of the Turner brands especially might mean. They have purchased a bunch of other sports, right? Like Zaslav has gone out and gotten some college football, and, you know, and he's got the Major League Baseball deal on TBS, and they have some deals, but the NBA really was the jewel in the crown and the number one reason that you'd pay $3 per subscriber per month for TNT. And so, kind of terrifying. I get it.
Well, you have to ask, Jason, you have to ask the question, is did Warner Discovery underestimate the value, the halo effect that the NBA brought to them? And, you know, for months they've been saying, oh, we're going to be fine. We're lining up these other deals, you know, the French Open of tennis. But, you know, let's be real. Right. The French Open is 2 weeks of the year, and it's not at a time that's particularly great for U.S. audiences. And, you know, the fact that they've lost a quarter of the value of this entire company, which has such strong assets, really shows that Wall Street has lost confidence in, you know, David Zaslav and his crew.
Yeah, I have been sympathetic all along when we've been talking about this story about Zaslav potentially analyzing it and saying, you know what, it's not worth what we would have to pay to keep those rights. It's not worth that. I that may have been a real miscalculation. I'm sure the people at Turner Sports were doing everything they could to say, no, 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 you don't understand how important that this is for the whole company. But, you know, I honestly, part of me just thinks he's an outsider. He wasn't part of the history of Turner or Warner Brothers, you know, in all of its various iterations. He came from Discovery, where they didn't pay for billions of dollars for sports rights. And I wonder if he just always felt a little skeptical about the need to pay a sports league billions of dollars. And, you know, he may have been really wrong about that. But I do think that maybe some of it was that, which is just like, it's not his, not where he comes from. That kind of business is not where he comes from. And maybe there's a failure of imagination going on there.
Well, 2 points on that. One is, and this predates David Zaslav, when the AT&T guys came in 2018, there was a huge purging of really strong executive talent. One of the people who did survive was Jeff Zucker, who was running CNN and Warner's sports business. Shortly before the Warner merger happened with Discovery, Zucker got forced out. So there was executives who were doing these deals that had no relationship with the NBA. And I think that, as you noted in your opening, that David went out, you know, a year and a half ago and said, we're not sure we need the NBA. We don't have to have the NBA, I think was the quote.
Yeah.
And, you know, that feels like a very naive way to start negotiations.
Yeah.
I think if you look at just the balance sheet numbers, yes, they could lose the NBA and maybe they would have a stronger balance sheet. But when you look at how the Wall Street, the investors have absorbed this news, the amount of money that they've lost in sheer value of the company, you know, is shows that investors didn't feel like they could lose the NBA and still maintain, you know, it's cable channels on this glide path, you know, towards, you know, a much smaller and less profitable business. So I think that if there was a miscalculation, the miscalculation was that there were other benefits that, you know, resonated and extended far beyond the sheer, you know, just how do you pencil this out on paper?
I've read a few stories that have said that you should not discount the value of the personal relationships, even when you're talking about billions of dollars changing hands, and that the turnover at Turner, and as you pointed out, sort of multiple levels of turnover at Turner over a few years, meant that there were not a lot of people left who had negotiated deals before between the NBA and Turner, who understood the length of that relationship and what it meant. I've definitely been in management turnovers like that, where the new management has to be really convinced that, you know, they come in to make change, right? The new management comes in to make change. And so when you're somebody who's been retained, you have this awkward situation where you need to sort of explain why your company did this a certain way. What's the lay of the land? What are the relationships here? And the danger is always that the new management's going to come in and say, I'm not going to listen to you guys. You're why we're in this position. I was brought in to make change. I'm the new management here. And I get a little bit of that vibe from the Turner and NBA negotiations where Zaslav didn't really understand it. He said that maybe accurately from a very high level business standpoint, but it made the NBA executives, the people who have to make these deals, angry. Like, he angered them unnecessarily, even if what he was saying was a business reality. To say it publicly and sort of run down the NBA and their relationship with the NBA, I think everybody's going to look back on that as a huge mistake from David Zaslav.
Well, yes. I mean, again, if the NBA you know, was if we were sitting here in 1995 and these cable channels were on the ascent, even if David had said something like that, the NBA would have done the deal with TNT, right? You know, they have the studio show. You know, that was the universe that we lived in the, you know, 1995 to 2000 and probably 14, you know, maybe even a little earlier, 2012 environment. But it's not the world we live in now. So therefore, I think that, you know, when we write the history in a few years, will the NBA deal be like the pivot point to where, you know, investors conclude like, hey, this just isn't working out. You know, the configuration of Warner Brothers Discovery is not working out, and we need to do something different. And that this, you know, is it turns out to be a costly mistake for David, you know, in his career. Because as you point out, he still has a lot of support.
I have one before we move on, one little side note here that I want to mention, my little theory. I think I mentioned in the past. I'm just going to throw it out there again, because Charles Barkley, who is like the star of TNT's NBA coverage, he's got a 10-year contract. He's only 3 years in. He said he was going to retire. Everybody who knew him said that's not true. He's not going to actually retire. He said he's not going to retire. So nobody, no surprise there. We knew that. But he said he will stay under the 10-year contract. He's reaffirming his relationship with Warner Brothers Discovery, which is interesting because the NBA is up in the air. They may have no NBA for him, and he is a former NBA star and an NBA analyst. And yes, he, you know, they're gonna have NCAA basketball, and they're going to have Major League Baseball playoffs, and they're going to have some other things. They'll send him to the French Open, maybe. I don't know. They've got these things for Barkley. Here's my wild theory, though, which is, how do you, if there's a settlement to be made for this lawsuit between Warner Brothers Discovery and the NBA, how does that make sense since the three other media partners do not want a fourth media partner? And I've read some stories that suggest one of the things that might be in play is the fact that Turner has their studios and their production facilities, and it's potentially possible that NBA TV, the cable channel, and a bunch of other kind of shoulder content for the NBA could potentially be a production deal that maybe Turner could pick up. It doesn't really help TNT at all. Maybe they say, well, you can do a weekly highlights show or something like that. It's not live rights, but it's something. And maybe somebody like Amazon would be kind of have their you know, at the NBA goes to them with like a really strong conversation, twists their arm a little bit, and says, you know, why don't you let Warner Brothers Discovery produce a version of Inside the NBA for you, for your streaming games, what something like that. So that's, I want to put it out there that I wonder if there is a way that WBD can save face and maybe use Charles Barkley as part of a way to give them a relationship with the NBA that is not one of the three broadcast packages. It's something that, you know, I don't know if that'll work out. This is high level negotiation stuff, but I don't know. It feels like there is probably some play that lets them save face and have a relationship with the NBA in some way. I don't know. I don't know. But I don't know why they're paying Charles Barkley all that money for 7 years if he's not going to talk about the NBA. That part just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, you know, that's so funny you mentioned that, because that I think is a theory that's sort of floating in the ether, or not so much in the ether, but among people who cover this business, because we are trying to figure out, like, you know, everyone, including the NBA, recognizes what a great show the Inside the NBA is. And, you know, since you've covered this space, that when Amazon started their Thursday night football, you know, they wanted Al Michaels. So it's like, so, you know, stranger things have happened, and, you know, licensing your show gives Warners a little bit of income. But yeah, I mean, I think that I think that the thing that's kind of crazy is there's been so much just friction and, you know, I don't want to say bad blood, but just sort of like the stakes are so high, as we started out saying, that it feels like, you know, what am I trying to say? It feels like there's a lot of bruised feelings over this, the way this deal went down. And it's going to be interesting to see how they salvage that. And you may be 100% right. Charles Barkley may be key.
Yeah, I mean, I keep thinking about how nobody really wants to take it to trial. You always want to have, and that this may even go to some sort of mediation. But when you've got the three winners of the deal saying, we don't want a fourth package, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of room for movement. And that's how you get something arbitrated or mediated, or you do some face-saving settlement. How do you settle if there's no place to go? And that's when I start to think, well, there are a few assets that Warner Brothers Discovery does have. Is there a way for them to feel like they have a relationship with the NBA, but that doesn't anger the other partners? And I don't know. It's a thorny problem. I guess we'll have the fall to consider it, because this isn't going to end anytime soon. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Factor. Fuel up for the warm, sunny days of the summer with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. There are chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's meals are fresh, never frozen, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you will always have time to enjoy nutritious and great tasting meals. That's a good two for nutrition and great taste in one. Make today the day you kickstart a new healthy routine. I have been getting Factor meals, and as I've said on other podcasts, best thing is this is the endorsement. My wife steals them. She takes them to work. She works outside her house. I don't. She has issues with lunch of like, am I going to pack a lunch? Am I going to make a lunch in the morning? Am I going to go out and spend money on lunch? And then the Factor meals come in a box, and she's like, okay, I'm going to just take these Factor meals away. And I think to myself, one of these days, I'm going to have a Factor meal for lunch. And then a bunch of them are gone because she has squirreled them away. And I think this is a fantastic endorsement. So easy, and they taste so good when you heat them up. Again, I was a kid. I had TV dinners. They were really bad. Thinking about taking this food from a box and microwaving it, it's like, how good could it be? The ingredients are so good. The quality is good. The taste is good. And if you don't believe me, believe my wife who steals my Factor meals. There's so much to love about Factor. There are 35 different meals, more than 60 different add-ons to choose from every week. So there are always new flavors to explore. Reach your wellness goals this month with dietitian-approved meals and ingredients that you can trust. Restaurant-quality meals, premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon, and keep kitchen time to a minimum. 2 minutes and they're ready. No shopping, prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Effortless support for your lifestyle. Six menu preferences to help you manage calories or maximize protein intake or avoid meat or simply eat in a well-balanced way. So go to factormeals.com/downstream50 and use the code downstream50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next month. That's code DOWNSTREAM50 at factormeals.com/DOWNSTREAM50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Thank you to Factor for supporting Downstream and Relay. Let's shift gears slightly and talk about some other sports events. This is what we like to call Sports Corner. I want to mention the Olympics. The Olympics are on. It was one of the big launch features for Peacock back in 2020, and then they delayed the Tokyo Olympics to 2021, but they did it for that. I feel like NBC has done a really good job in the Paris Olympics, figuring out the whole what do you put on linear, what do you put on streaming, having the highlights really just be the highlights in prime time, and you can watch that every event during the day if you want. Including some very good stuff that they built on Peacock, including the Gold Zone program, where you basically have NFL Red Zone for Olympics, where you turn it on and they just show you where the gold medals are and what's going on. I think that I don't know if you've had a chance to see any of the Olympics coverage, but this is it feels like we had about 2 decades where everybody in America just complained about how NBC's coverage of the Olympics was frustrating, and I feel like it's over now. I feel like they did it. They figured it out, and they've made Peacock have some real value while also putting some things on the network and on their cable channels. And I don't know. It's a strange feeling to not be complaining about NBC's Olympic coverage, but I think they kind of nailed it. I don't know if you've had a chance to see any of it yourself.
Oh no, I think it's been tremendous. I think the coverage has been great. I think that, you know, we have seen a rebound in ratings over the last year and a half for sports and award shows. That's something that we at the LA Times cover very closely. So I feel like, you know, the pandemic was so disruptive and people are settling back into their, you know, former habits. And I think that, you know, that I don't think it's unfair to NBC to say that they, you know, really botched a lot of their previous attempts on streaming, and, you know, even way back, you know, their coverage of Wimbledon was really frustrating. But that's an aside. But I do think that they've, to your point, they've really figured it out. They approach this now as a, you know, sort of a two-pronged sort of reach of how do we, you know, how do we engage the big fans and also the, for lack of a better word, the older audiences that are very established and want to tune into the, you know, the prime time sort of wrap up. And also I think too, the time zone in Tokyo was horrendous. So that hurt them too. So you had, you know, there was, and it really felt just sad and cavernous that there weren't family members on site. And I do think that it's weird, but it's actually, it is something that's true. If there aren't people in the stands screaming and yelling and family members crying, it takes away the drama. I mean, think about just like in the first year of the pandemic when certain stadiums were putting like cardboard cutouts of people in the stands. I mean, so they recognize it, which seems silly at the time, but we really do thrive on the emotion of the Olympics. And I think that NBC has over the years figured out how not to be too maudlin in their stories, but also, you know, just really hit on the human interest points and, you know, the camera angles too. And just the graphics really are exciting to watch. If you know, just like the arcs of some of the gymnastic moves. Mm.
Yeah, the technical quality. I bought my first HD TV right before an Olympics. Maybe it was Athens. And I remember at that point, all the HD stuff was the day after it happened in standard def. It was like the next day you got to see it. But I just remember watching a swimming event in HD for the first time and thinking, oh my God, I can see them under the water now. Like I can actually see what's happening in the swimming event. And over the course of the last 15 years, 20 years, the technology has improved so much on a production standpoint. And then I think everybody's gotten smarter. You know, NBC was a little bit too staid, a little bit too static. They felt like they had to protect things that happened during the day that they just would pretend didn't happen so that they could show them in prime time. And they got over that. And I think it was an important thing for them to get over because it allowed them to really embrace that storytelling, sometimes too maudlin, but not so much, you know, not as much lately. And know that there's an audience who wants to tune in at 2 in the afternoon to see it live. But you know what? There are a lot more people who don't have that kind of time and they want to tune in at 8 p.m. and get a good 2 or 3 hours of the very best stuff. And with streaming, they can really serve those audiences. And then throwing in things like having Snoop Dogg around or having Colin Jost go to and get horrible injuries while he was there, go to Tahiti for the surfing and bringing in personalities. They have their highlight comedy show that they're doing that Kenan Thompson is in. That is just it's a comedy thing with and it's streaming, so it's got like bad words and stuff, and they don't care because that's what that show is meant to be. And like I mentioned, the Gold Zone, like they literally hired the two guys who did that for the NFL Red Zone, the DirecTV version and the NFL Network version, and that they were two of the four people doing Gold Zone on the Olympics, the whip around thing, which again, it's not for everybody. But it's another audience that could be served who's not going to dial in to field hockey, but wants kind of like just, hey, tell me what's going on and take me to where the good stuff is. So like, I don't know. I think they're really smart. Obviously, they're not all in Paris. They've got their whole complex in Stamford, Connecticut that they use for a lot of this stuff with backdrops that make it look like they're in Paris, but they're not. But it's okay. I think it'll be interesting to see what they do. Your, you know, neck of the woods, right? Like in 4 years, it's LA. So the time zones will be even more favorable in some ways. I'm sure they'll have big gymnastics finals happening and in, you know, at 5 p.m. Pacific. So it's in prime time on the East Coast. But I don't know. I feel like this was a really big success for NBC on a big stage where they managed to get like everything lined up and they showed their vision and that Peacock has done good work and been a must watch for me the last week and a half. I think that that's all to the good. And if we learned anything from Amazon's NFL game and Peacock's NFL playoff game, they're going to keep some of the people who came to Peacock for the Olympics. That's all. That's part of the point, is that they will retain some percentage of those people and they will stay on Peacock, and that's good for NBC as well. So, yeah.
No, I think those are all great points. And I think what the key was they finally recognized that, you know, they could not hold on to prime time as the end all be all. And when that really, you know, sunk in, which, you know, they're smart. Again, they're very smart people. When that, you know, realization hit, like, okay, and we need to build up Peacock, that liberated them to really sort of reach out to other audiences and just, and to your point about the Kenan show, which is great. I mean, I love that guy. It just sort of lets other people shine.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an interesting point you made there. The maybe it was the strategic necessity to knowing that Peacock, having a streamer, that was the future of the company, future growth path of the company. I wonder if that was really the moment that gave them permission. They felt they had permission to sort of not worry so much about the crown jewels of the primetime broadcast. And I think all for the better. And I think, you know, many of us might have said they should have done it 8 years before, 12 years before. But if Peacock is the thing that helped unlock them to think bigger, great. Because I think the result's good. So good for them.
Well, I mean, to your point, too, in 2021, technologically and just like, you know, they weren't ready for it.
Yeah, it was early.
It's just like, you know, good things come to those who wait.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that, yes, it's not only that they recognize that Peacock is the future of the company. I think they recognize that younger viewers are on streaming,
right,
and that's where they have to run. It's a breakneck race.
If you're a cord cutter or a cord never, you can watch the Olympics on Peacock. You can just do it. You pay for Peacock and watch the Olympics, which is pretty good deal. Pretty good deal for people who might otherwise, you know, if they're like, oh, wait, it's on TV. I don't have that. Well, no, it's on Peacock. You can get it there. It's good. Good for them. Speaking of streaming and sports, I wanted to talk about the fact that Venue Sports, which we used to call Spulu, it's the joint venture between Disney, ESPN, Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery to build something that is a sports streamer, really sort of I'll explain in a minute. They did a price. It's coming out this fall. They did a price, $42.99 per month, and I saw a lot of people say, oh, I can't believe that's so expensive, that's ridiculous. But if you're paying attention, you know what Venue really is an attempt to replace the traditional cable bundle, because ESPN, for example, has never been available via just straight streaming. ESPN Plus is not ESPN. It's the content that currently is only for cable subscribers. And likewise, Fox hasn't put any of its Fox broadcast stuff on a free, no cable subscriber streaming subscription. That hasn't happened. So they're trying to build an alternative to YouTube TV or Fubo, which is why Fubo is suing them. Something for cord cutters or people who only keep the cord for sports. So I don't know. I mean, it's weird because ESPN's working on their own standalone thing for next year. And this is this interesting kind of joint venture, and there are some lawsuits about it. But I have to say, as a sports fan who only uses my Fubo subscription for two things, which is sports and Jeopardy, which may be covered on this because of ABC being part of the bundle here. $42.99 is a lot less than I'm paying, because I'm paying something like $70 or $75 a month to get access to a virtual version of the cable bundle. So, you know, Venue seems expensive, and you'd still have to buy Paramount Plus and Peacock in order to get their football games and stuff. But, and there are some stories that say they're still actually negotiating, Venue is, to see if they can come to some sort of bundling agreement with those companies as well. But I don't know. I don't know if you have any thoughts about Venue, but I was just taken by surprise that so many people were aghast at the idea that it's a $43 a month subscription. That is expensive compared to a streaming service, but it's actually way cheaper than cable or YouTube TV.
Well, I think one of the problems is if it had all the sports you wanted to see.
I think that's
the friction, right, Jason? That's
where
people are like, wow, because you know, NBC's not in it.
No.
You know, Amazon's not in it. So basically it's Fox, Disney, and Warner Discovery. And now, you know, that Warner Discovery isn't going to have NBA. That makes its sort of participation a little more, you know, sort of, I don't want to say questionable, but just sort of like curious.
Yeah, they're a lesser partner if they don't have the NBA. Yeah, yeah. No, that's why I ranted about this a couple weeks ago on this podcast, but you know, whether it's Venue or whether it's the ESPN service next year, it feels like there is an opportunity here to be the go-to aggregator of sports content. Because one of the frustrations is, if you want to watch, you name the sport, it's very frustrating. You've got to subscribe to a whole bunch of different things in order to get all the games. You can't just pay once. You have to go to all these different things because they carved up the packages purposefully to make more money. Venue puts three of them together, but to your point, doesn't put the other ones together. And, you know, maybe there are deals to be made where you like, we'll cut you in and we'll give you a bounty and you'll be part of our service. Or maybe, you know, Venue gets the right to resell Paramount Plus or resell, but you're still going to have to pay for it, right? That's the challenge. But I think you could at least, if you could have a unified interface where you could come to one app and know that like it'll show you all the sports that are happening right now and it will take you to the right place to see it. And if you don't have access, it will let you buy that access and just go see the game I want to watch. I think that would be better than nothing because, yeah, the alternative is essentially the cable bundle. It's essentially saying you can put it all together. And with Venue right now, you would not be able to put it all together. You'd pay for Venue and then you'd go pay for Paramount and then you'd go pay for Peacock and then you'd go pay for Prime Video.
Right.
Yeah.
So now you're back up to, you know, the same price that you were already paying. So I think therein lies the challenge. And also, you know, there's members of Congress who really want the Justice Department to look at this deal thinking it's anti-competitive.
I mean, it is a little collusion-y, isn't it? Right. I mean, it is. It's three big entertainment companies pooling their resources.
I mean, it's like, you know, that was one of the things, interestingly enough, since, you know, I'm old enough to have covered this when it was happening. That was one of the reasons why Hulu initially had two partners. And then once they got it rolling, the original partners were NBC and Fox.
Yeah.
Once they got it rolling, they brought in Disney. And then later on, they brought in Warner's for a small stake. Mm-hmm. That was long before David Zaslav and AT&T. So, yeah, I mean, it's. I think the issue is that, you know, 15 years ago when they were 15, 20 years ago, well, I guess it was 15 years ago when they were forming Hulu, you know, the traditional guys were really, you know, that was it. That was the company town, right? Mm. And now you have Apple and you have Netflix and you have Amazon. And so I think that it is going to be interesting for the government to say, like, wait a second, you know, what's going on here when you already have Hulu that had been, you know, in existence. Now Disney owns it all. But Amazon has so many of these rights. Netflix now is going to have an NFL game on Christmas Day.
Right.
So I think that it, you know, just sort of the changing landscape. And also the fact that so many consumers are like, you know, I am just so sick of having to, you know, get this, get that, and then drop this and drop that. I mean, yes, like Peacock, after their game in the first quarter, the playoffs game, the NFL playoff game, they lost subscribers in the next quarter because a lot of people were there for that particular
sure.
And then they fled. Now they're probably back for most of them, or some of them are probably back for the Olympics. But you know, that's one of the things that these companies probably will never be able to replace, is just the stickiness, that it was just too
Yeah.
difficult to cancel your cable
You
bill. You'd
can't.
like you had to
There's
take
nowhere
a
to go.
day off from work. The guy might not show up, you know,
You may not
and
have an
then
alternative, right? Like you may
you
literally,
didn't
that's the
have an
only way to have TV.
alternative.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, so that's what I think, that this industry, you know, as we go through this shakeout, you know, just the churn, you mentioned Paramount, you know, losing, you know, 3 million subscribers. So streaming subscribers. So I mean, that churn is endless.
Yeah, it's so easy to do. Yeah, venue. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I can see why, for example, NBC is not interested in playing ball with them because they're trying to build a cable bundle, and NBC is Comcast. They're like, no. We have that. It's like we do that. That's our job. Don't you know? We're not trying to recreate a single place. And I understand why Fubo, especially Fubo TV, is a virtual cable company. And it was meant to be for sports fans. Now they've broadened it since then, but it was meant to be for sports fans. And the reason they're suing, and this is a thing I think that they've got a leg to stand on, is the idea that what Fubo wanted was just the sports channels from Disney and just the sports channels from Warner Brothers Discovery. And they played the usual cable TV game, right? Which is no, you have to take our whole bundle. You have to buy all of these channels. And so that's why Fubo is $70, $75 a month, is because if you want access to ESPN, you have to get all the Disney cable channels. You just have to, and you have to pay them for all of them. The promise of Venu is that they're going to create these skinnier bundles that are focused on sports rights. But, you know, if they built it just for themselves and nobody else could ever have access to it, it feels a little fishy to me. So I do wonder if they're going to be some, they're trying to get this thing out this fall, which, I mean, we'll see. But I do wonder if it's going to have a lot of different kinds of legal scrutiny around it that might make that difficult. I don't know.
Well, not only that, you know, as we covered the Hulu saga, you know, there's always a lot of, you know, people having different priorities. You know, for instance, Comcast, when they took over NBC, you know, their priority was not to make Hulu this fabulous service, because that was going to take away from their core business. So all these different companies have different priorities,
Right.
and that usually it plays out too in these boardrooms, oftentimes behind closed doors. But you know, that's real. Those challenges are real.
Well, if I were their partner, if I was the Fox or Warner Brothers Discovery, I would also be looking a little askance at Disney, just because I know that Disney is building the ESPN service for next year. And so how much is Disney behind Venu? I don't know. I wanted to mention, because we've talked about it here before, just in passing, the judge in the NFL Sunday Ticket case, where there were, you know, billions and billions of dollars tripled against the NFL for violating antitrust law. The judge in that case overturned the verdict, said that the experts that brought in were misleading, and that that misled the jury, and that he was going to set aside the verdict. Which I did say 3 weeks ago when we were last on this podcast. I said never bet against the NFL. I mean, it's just they're so big and so powerful. However, the verdict does open the door, I think, for a lot more litigation, including the latest deal with YouTube TV for NFL Sunday Ticket. But I just wanted to mention that it did get overturned, and that's the NFL dodging that bullet. So, you know, there are always going to be more assaults, but this idea that this case had said essentially the NFL can't make these negotiations and that there might be some plausible way that individual teams could negotiate TV rights, that's all back up in the air because the verdict was set aside.
Yeah, no, that was pretty amazing, because that verdict was so, like, oh my gosh. So
Shocking. Yeah.
yeah, shocking is a good word.
Yeah, but set aside, just like so anticlimactic after all of that, that the judge thought no, that thought better of it, thought better of it. Okay, Disney, we mentioned. I wanted to at least touch on Disney Disney's came out with its results. It says that it's doing better. The streaming division turned a profit for the first time. There are a lot of asterisks, but it's a start. An operating income loss, but apparently not next quarter. So that they're saying their streaming business is progressing. They are increasing the price of Disney Plus, Hulu, ESPN Plus, and the various bundles, while also rolling in some new content. This is interesting. Disney, for the first time, getting on board with the sort of streaming channels approach for their content. Sometimes you just want to turn on a channel. So they're going to have ABC News Live, as well as a bunch of themes that they're going to roll out in certain content categories. I know when I talked to Julia on this show for all those years, she was a big fan of this. And I am too. The idea that, you know, it's the classic, I just need to fold some laundry. Can I put on something? And that Disney is going to be able to dig in its archive and generate some streaming channels where you just press the button and it will just keep showing you things that are of a kind. Or you can turn on the news, which, you know, most of its competitors already have a live news stream as part of its package. So that will be a new feature, live streaming stuff on Disney Plus and Hulu, et cetera. So we'll see what's happening. Although I will say, as somebody who subscribes to that bundle, boy, the price increases everywhere are starting to hurt. And you mentioned churn earlier, and like more, higher prices is just going to increase churn. It's just going to be, I feel like, you know, this is where we're really going to see some services really start to suffer, the ones that are laggards, because the industry is forcing people to choose what they're going to drop, because people are not going to want to pay even more for all of these streaming services. And Netflix is very expensive. The Disney bundle is going to be very expensive. Peacock just raised its rates. Like, all of the rates are going up, and I can't see how it won't increase churn and ultimately harm probably the weaker of the streamers. What do you think?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, several years ago, there was, executives who said, like, there will only be, three or four streaming services that really survive. I think there'll be more streaming services that will survive. I mean, you just look at Sony's Crunchyroll. I mean, that has 15 million subscribers plus.
Yeah, huge milestone.
Yeah. So I think that it's not going to be a business that everyone can make gobs of money in. There's going to be, some niche services. You know, you look at the little tennis channel. I mean, it's like, how does a service like that survive in this environment? So I think that, yes, it's the survival of the fittest. Goes back to what you were saying about how, NBC, Comcast is really bulking up its offerings on Peacock. They're spending, huge sums. They're losing huge sums, but they're in it for the long game. And then you have someone like Warner Discovery, back to our initial discussion, where they don't seem to have the bandwidth, the financial bandwidth, to really go after some of this stuff or even retain some of that stuff. So, will Max survive? I mean, they changed the name from HBO Max to Max, thinking that it was going to be more appealing to people who might be turned off by the coastal elite type of programming on HBO, but it hasn't moved the needle. And there's an analyst that are saying, like, you probably should call it HBO, because at least that brand has resonance.
Right.
So no, we're in a major shakeout. I think it's going to continue for at least the next 3 years. You've seen, Sherry Redstone sell Paramount because, she recognized that, that things weren't going to get better anytime soon. You saw Rupert Murdoch, how many years, 7 years ago, almost, do the deal with Bob Iger so that Disney would take over Fox.
Yeah.
And then you also, on the other hand, see Amazon, spend $8.5 billion for MGM, one of the original movie studios, and now they're bringing back, like the United Artists label. So it's this major migration and transition, and people and companies and moguls whom we, talk about, almost on a first name basis right now, may not be around in another 2 years.
Yeah.
Not. I know. I mean, I don't mean just like, I just mean not part of the picture,
not
like
part,
the Redstones.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. No, you're right. And when we talk about all these, I think there is an inevitable wave of service mergers happening that will happen as well, right? Like I have a hard time. I would not bet on Max, Peacock, and Paramount Plus all being what they are now in 2 or 3 years, right? Like there feels like consolidation is another thing that's going to happen, but
right. And in fact, earlier today, Paramount said they didn't say they were in discussions. They said that they're, fielding queries from other players, about joint ventures and streaming. Also, one of the interesting things, not to make this about politics, because we want to stay away from that, but one of the interesting things is like who is elected in November and what will their administration allow? Right. I mean, the Biden administration has been tougher on mergers than we've seen in at least, I would say, 20 years.
Right.
And so, if Kamala Harris is elected, will she continue that stance? Will it be tougher? And, if Trump is elected, then, will it be just sort of open season? The Disney-Fox deal went through in lightning speed, and in part because, Rupert Murdoch was there, a friend of the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens.
All right, before we go, I have a letter from a listener. If people want to write us, downstreamfeedback.com. We love to hear from you, love to your mothers. This is from Kyle. I'm curious, so as a Los Angeles Times reporter, this is the company, it's a company town in a way. Maybe you've got some perspective on this. Kyle says, can you talk a little bit about the crazy cost growth for prestige TV shows over the last few years? The second season of House of the Dragon was rumored to have 2 episodes cut due to cost. Severance is rumored to have a $20 million per episode price tag. And it seems like every Marvel show ends up costing as much as a movie. What's driving the costs up? And is it contributing to abbreviated seasons, early cancellations, and weird pacing? What do you think?
That's a great question. And I would say yes. The costs, the long answer is that when Netflix got into the prestige TV game, they were willing to spend whatever it took to attract the talent. And so it became a real seller's market if you were a producer, if you were a writer. And also, when everyone had HDTV, then you want these, just incredible vistas, even thinking about, shows like, Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul. I mean, the artistry, it's been a long day. You know what I'm trying to say? Yes. Is just through the roof, and it is movie level production. But I think what has happened is that because these companies have lost so much money trying to build their streaming services, that they have spent the last 2 years looking for ways to sort of become more focused in their buying. I mean, we saw a lot of that at Warner Discovery. I mean, the listener, cites House of the Dragons and other shows that, where they really have looked at their budgets, because the $20 million an episode, cannot be the norm.
Right.
So I think, yes, that's the reason why you've seen, and it's also the reason why we've seen such a slow recovery after the actors and writers strikes last year. The studios were not buying programs other than for the broadcast networks for the fall season on a pace that they were. Production's been down in Los Angeles. It's all because of this hangover effect from the streaming bubble, and the peak TV bubble, which burst.
Yeah, it's a real challenge. We will see. I feel like there will be a recalibration, right? Where they're just like with movies, they're going to be blockbusters that cost a lot of money, and then they're going to be ones where they saved a little bit of money. In fact, I don't know if this is actually true, but in watching The Acolyte, the most recent Star Wars show, it didn't look cheap. It really didn't. It looked expensive, but it didn't look as expensive as some of the previous Star Wars shows. And I had that thought of like, are we heading back down to where the Star Wars show, might be more mid-budget than high budget, that we might, take our feet off the gas a little bit and let the shows, not every show has to be a blockbuster. Not every movie has to cost $300 million, right? Like that maybe there will be a little bit more of that now. But right, like you were saying, in the early days where everybody, it was a gold rush, everybody's just spending as much money as they could. And that's not going to happen. Yeah,
they were trying to keep the talent, and also, you know, they wanted to be in the prestige TV game. I think one of the things, I can't speak specifically to, you know, the example that you just raised, but when Bob Iger came back to Disney, they looked at some of the, you know, just the massive amounts of programming, and they said, "Hey, we can't maintain the quality that our audiences are used to seeing with this level of volume
of the Marvel shows." Yeah, for in particular, it was too much.
Yes, yeah. It was too much, and I think they're really looking carefully at the Star Wars, the Lucasfilms, you know, franchises, for sure. Because that's also such a valuable franchise, and it hasn't been doing as well, and they really are going to have to level set, you know, what they can do and at what price points. But I also think too that, you know, so many people in Los Angeles in the industry are just not working. They thought, "Oh, we're going to get through the strikes last year," but I mean the business, the jobs have been so slow to really return that. And, you know, the mantra in Hollywood is survive to 25, because they really are feeling the pain of this shakeout. You know, it's just the days of creating, you know, 600 television shows in 1 year, you know, that appears to be over. There's just not enough time in the day to watch all of that programming. And these companies have determined they don't have enough money to lay out for, you know, the high levels of production that we're used to seeing.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Downstream. Meg, thank you so much for being here. I normally say at this point, where can people find the stuff that you do? I assume that the answer for you is in the Los Angeles Times and at latimes.com. Anything in particular you want to mention that you're working on or have been working on?
Well, I thank you for the plug. LATimes.com. I think that myself and my colleagues, we work really hard to try to cover the business of Hollywood. And it's such a dynamic time right now. There's, you know, so much to cover. We've really, you know, looked at film safety. We've looked at, you know, just sort of the economy of Hollywood. And so I would steer your listeners to our site.
Awesome. I will put a link to your archive page in our show notes. If people out there haven't yet, please consider subscribing to Downstream Plus. This was a full-sized episode for everybody, but the only way to hear the complete version of our next episode will be to be a subscriber. You go to downstream.plus to subscribe, and you can support the show and make sure it keeps going. You can find me at sixcolors.com, and I appear on many other podcasts here at Relay, as well as over at theincomparable.com. Downstream will be back in 2 weeks. Thank you again to Meg James for being on. Thank you so much. We will see you next time.